If you were here last week, you'll know that we started a new series that we've entitled Psalm 23. Well, it's on Psalm 23, but we're actually calling it Safe and Sound. And we're doing a kind of a verse by verse, phrase by phrase look at Psalm 23. Last week, I began talking to you about what is the theme for the whole of Psalm 23. Which is, the Lord is my shepherd. Let me put that up there for you right here. The Lord is my shepherd. Every one of us in here this morning, and every day for that matter, is shepherded by someone or something. Shepherding is about taking direction from, taking guidance from, and even being owned by or controlled by. David, when he said, "The Lord is my shepherd," he was in essence saying, God is the one to whom I look for direction. He is the one that I choose to give oversight of my life to. And he is the one to whom I belong. But you can't really identify God as your shepherd unless you are first willing to identify yourself as a sheep. Let me say that again. You can't truly identify God as your shepherd unless you yourself are willing to be identified as a sheep. One of the things about identifying yourself about a sheep is you're saying that I need direction. I need some management in my life. I need somebody to look after me. If you feel like you can do this thing on your own, then you don't need God as your shepherd. But if you've come to the conclusion, like I have, I can't do a good job of managing my own life, it ends up in a disaster when I try to do it myself. We are in need, as sheep, of his oversight and care. Now, that is just some of the things that we touched on last week, but I want to take you now to the next stanza, to the next phrase of Psalm 23. In the King James Version, it simply says, "I shall not want." In the NIV, it says, "I shall not be in want." I want to point out to us this morning the important, I want to start here. I want to start by saying to you that punctuation, you know, a lot of times when we read the Bible, we're just looking at the words, and we failed many times to see the importance of the way the Bible is punctuated. Did you know that punctuation is really important? If you didn't know that, I'd like to introduce you to my wife. She'll try to explain it to you if you don't understand how punctuation works. Now, if you read it this way, listen, if you read it this way, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," it almost sounds like, doesn't it, like you don't want God to be your shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But there's some punctuation in there that makes all the difference in the world, and it's in there for a reason. Now, to illustrate the importance of punctuation, I want to show you a couple funny things. I think you'll really enjoy these. The first one is a slide that I found that says, "Let's eat Grandpa." So those three words, or four words, with the combination of less, let's, whatever, it sounds like that you might actually want to eat Grandpa, or it could be, with the comma in the right place, it could be just like telling Grandpa that it's time to eat, right? And then underneath it there, it says commas, "They save lives." I don't know if you can see that there. It says they save lives. A teacher gave his students this sentence. Woman without her man is nothing. And he asked the students to punctuate that. I know I'm dangerous territory. Bucky's looking at me like, what in the world? The teacher asked the students if they could work with that a little bit there and put punctuation in a proper place. So the first one, now listen to this one. You take those words, same words, right? But you put some punctuation to it. It says this: woman without her, man is nothing. Now, ladies, you like that, right? You, the first one, maybe not so much. Second one, no problem. But then there's this third one: woman without her man is nothing. Same words, but because of some punctuation things, kind of changes the meaning of all of it. Here's maybe some of you have seen this one before. This one's awesome. This is a love letter written to John from Jane, all right? It goes like this. Dear John, I want a man who knows what love is all about. You are generous, kind, and thoughtful. People who are like you admit to being useless and inferior. You have ruined me for other men. I yearn for you. I have no feelings when we're apart. I can be forever happy. Will you let me be yours, Jane? Nice little love letter, right? Sounds like it. But if you play with the punctuation a little bit, it ends up being a true Dear John letter. Dear John, I want a man who knows what love is. All about you are generous, kind, and thoughtful people who are not like you. Admit to being useless and inferior. You have ruined me. For other men, I yearn. For you, I have no feelings whatsoever. When we're apart, I can be forever happy. Will you let me be yours, Jane? Right? Identical wording, but the punctuation put in different places. So this morning we're looking at this sentence. The Lord is my shepherd, semicolon, I shall not be in want. That semicolon right there makes all the difference in the world in this sentence. A semicolon, listen now, a semicolon is used to link two independent clauses that are closely related in thought. Those ideas or thoughts are then assigned equal importance because of the semicolon. Like right now, my wife is passed out on the floor because I'm even talking about this, right? I had to look all this stuff up, right? But a semicolon, okay, so what am I saying? I'm saying this. When you see that semicolon after the Lord is my shepherd, what we're saying is the Lord is my shepherd is a really important part of Psalm 23. It's the theme of Psalm 23. But equally in importance is I shall not be in want. That's what that little punctuation did for us when we read that sentence. If we live thinking that we are the ones who are doing all the care and providing for our lives, it will cause us, because these two things are connected, it will cause us to wander further away from God being our shepherd. So what does this phrase, I shall not be in want, really mean? So the first thing I want to do with this morning is I want to talk about the difference between need and want. You know, a lot of times in our culture and the way we go about talking about things, we kind of use those terms interchangeably. But they're really not the same thing. And it's important for us to understand that. A need, here we go, a need is something that is necessary or required for a person to survive or thrive. Need is common to every one of us in here this morning. In other words, all of us in here have some of the same needs. Those needs come in different forms. If you were to look at it objectively, we could say we all need air, right? Or oxygen. We all need that. You need that to survive and thrive. You need water, you need food, you need things like rest, shelter, security. Those are all essential needs that each one of us in this room right here, and for that matter, every person on planet Earth has. Every person has that. We could also say on a subjective level that we all have the need of love, right? So some of those are very concrete in nature. Now looking at it in a more subjective way, all of us need love. We need love. We need community. We need purpose in our lives. All those kinds of things. All of those things could be translated as needs. Something necessary or required for a person to survive or thrive. Each of us is hardwired with needs. And I might add, when our needs are not being supplied, there is a suffering, if you will, that takes place when our needs are not being met. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, want is something different. Want has to do with our choices and desires, whether in the immediate or in the future. Choices, our wants, our desires are not necessary for thriving or surviving. I'm talking to people in America right now. This is, okay. Life will go on if I don't get what I want. That's it. It will go on. Let me example it for you this morning. In a moment ago, I said to you, one of our needs, bodily needs is each of us needs to eat, right? You got to eat. You got to eat to survive. That is a need that each of us have. But what I eat is a want, right? I can't say I need to eat pizza. No, I can say I need to eat, but I can't say I can't say I need to eat pizza. What I can say is I want to eat pizza. I've got to eat something, but my choice, my want, would be pizza at that moment. Do you understand the difference? Wants are individual in nature. Every human being has many of the same needs, but every human being does not have the same wants. The wants in our life have to do with how we are wired personally, and that differs from person to person. The wants can also change as I go through different seasons in life, where needs are the kind of things that remain constant throughout my life. Now, objectively, if we look at wants now, objectively, I could say I want a bigger house. I want more money. I want a new car. I want a faster computer. They aren't necessarily needs. They're wants on our parts. On a subjective side, we could say I want a more loving spouse, right? I've heard some of you say that before. I want more obedient children. I want more caring friends. Those are all wants, not necessarily needs. Are you still there? What happens is okay, let me say it to this way. Need is required, want is desired. And if you're ever confused about those two, you simply need to ask yourself this question. Have I been able to survive without fill in the blank? Have I been able to survive without pizza? Well, maybe not, you know. I don't. We tend to say things we need. I'm talking about myself now, but I think it's true of you. We tend to say we need things that in actuality we don't actually need. There are some bad things that happen when you and I mistakenly take needs take wants and turn them into needs. Some really bad things that happen. I'm going to list three really bad things that happen. And we're all guilty of this, okay? I'm not standing here talking to you this morning like I never do this. I'm telling you straight up, we have a way of taking wants and somehow mistakenly turn them into needs. And one of the tragic things that happen is we begin to feel entitled. We are living in a culture right now that has confused wants with needs. When we name a want, a need, we are telling God and others that we have a just claim or a right to fill in the blank. Now, what happens is entitlement turns into requirement. Where now, instead of that whatever that thing is or person is, instead of it being something that is something I desire, it now has turned into a requirement. I have to have this. I have to have this. Once you feel entitled to something or someone, you now believe it is your right to demand it. It is required in order to move forward. Now, number three, what ends up happening is we end up, depending on how that thing turns out, we end up judging or in a place of judgment about what just occurred. Let me example this for you. Let's take a job, for example. Obviously, we all need to earn a living, right? Are you there? We must do something, or we should do something, in order for revenue to come our way. But then we fall into these places where we say, well, I have a job, but I want that promotion, right? And that want all of a sudden gets turned into a need, right? And we feel entitled to that promotion. Translated, more money, etc., etc. Now, because we've said we're entitled to it, right? It has turned into a requirement. I have to have this. And if the people that are in charge of that thing don't bring about our desired ends, we judge them as being less than, right? Come on. Come on. We've done this. We do it all the time. We don't like to admit it, but we do it. So if they perform and come through for us, we love them. You're so wonderful. You're the best people ever. You're the greatest boss. You're the greatest. This is the greatest place to work. If they don't come through for us, ouch. those people, they don't appreciate me, they don't value me, they don't respect me, they don't, so on and so on. What has happened? What has happened? A want has turned into a need. You've translated it as a need that must be fulfilled. Man, it got super quiet. I want you to notice that the beginning letters of these three words sound like this when pronounced: urge. Urge. E-R-G. J. Thank you. Appreciate that. Now, listen. I'll come back to that in just a minute. There is nothing intrinsically wrong or sinful to want. Please hear me this morning. There is nothing intrinsically wrong or sinful to want. Want has to do with desires that are unique to you. It is some of the things in your heart that you want that kind of go into making who you are. To desire or want is a good thing. If we didn't desire or want in life, we would be passionless. There would be nothing kind of motivating us. It's like, well, I'm just a need. All I do is get needs met. No, your wants are kind of what brings some excitement to life, right? Desire, in many respects, is like fuel to our soul. We want to experience things. We want to go and do things. We want to have a bigger paycheck at the end of the week, and it gives us some incentive to maybe work a little harder. But it becomes a serious problem when what we want and desire ends up consuming us, and an urge grips us that we cannot let go of. These urges, I call them, are not in keeping with what the shepherd of our souls wants to give us. The Lord is my shepherd. That's what David said. That's supposed to be our cry and our prayer as well. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. I read to you last week, and I want to read to you again. I was telling you about this book that I read years ago, and I came back around to it again just recently. It's a book by this guy by the name of Philip Keller, and it's called A Shepherd's Look at Psalm 23. What ends up happening when we have urges that go unmet, we end up becoming what he calls in his book, fence crawlers. I'm going to read to you. Now, this dude that wrote this book was a shepherd himself. That's what he did. He did sheep. He said, I once owned a ewe whose conduct exactly typified this want out of proportion. She was one of the most attractive sheep that ever belonged to me. Her body was beautifully proportioned. She had a strong constitution and an excellent coat of wool. Her head was alert, clean, alert. She had well-set, bright eyes. She bore sturdy lambs that matured rapidly. But in spite of all these attractive attributes, she had one pronounced fault. She was relentless, discontent, a fence crawler. So much so that I came to call her Mrs. Gadabout. This one ewe produced more problems for me than almost the rest of the flock combined. No matter what field or pasture the sheep were in, she would search all along the fences, or in his case, shoreline, because they live by the sea, looking for a loophole that she could crawl through and start to feed on the other side. It was not that she lacked pasture. My fields were a joy and a delight. No sheep in the district had better grazing. With Mrs. Gadabout, it was an ingrained habit. She was simply never contented with things as they were. Often when she had forced her way through some such spot in the fence and found a way around the end of the wire at low tide on the beaches, she would end up feeding on bare, brown, burned-up pasture of a most inferior sort. But she never learned her lesson and to continue to fence crawl time after time. Now, if that had not been bad enough, if she was the only one who learned to do this. It was a sufficient problem to try to find her repeatedly and bring her back to the flock. But the problem became more extensive when she taught her lambs to do the same thing. They simply followed her example and soon were as skilled at escaping as their mother. But he goes on to say, I also couldn't help but notice the example she set. Other sheep began to follow. In short time, she began to lead others through the same holes and over the same dangerous paths down to the sea. After putting up with her perverseness for a summer, I finally came to the conclusion that in order to save the rest of the flock from becoming unsettled, she would have to go. I could not allow one obstinate, discontented ewe to ruin the whole ranch operation. Now, I'm not going to read to you what he actually did with that sheep, because I was reading it to Josh this week, and when Josh moaned, I thought, oh boy, I better not read that to everybody else. In this culture we live in, this narcissistic entitlement culture we live in, where it is said to us either literally or certainly implied to us that our hearts should have whatever our hearts want. In fact, it's almost like you do not dare tell people they cannot have what they want. In that culture, this sentence takes on even more relevance. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. This verse or this phrase, I shall not be in want, has everything to do with where you have set your heart. There is no doubt in my mind that in the computer of our souls, our default setting is on me, on what I want. In other words, when in doubt, the default of my soul is always back upon me and what I want. Recently, this is confession time. Recently, my wife and I have had probably what I would call one of the worst seasons of our marriage. I think that's fair to say. When my mom and dad were living with us, there are certain things that test your wants and your desires. Put that under a little pressure. Hello? Put that under that a little selfless circumstance where you're being called to exhibit selflessness at a greater level. You'll find out real quick how much flesh is left in you. How much of that me is still in there? Because prior to that, I'm going about living my life and I'm thinking, wow, I'm just a servant of God. I'm just loving everybody. I'm serving everybody. You know, I got this thing pretty much down. And then a mom and dad move in with you who all of a sudden it calls for a greater level of sacrifice, a greater level of serving others more so than yourself. Hello?
Yeah.
Now, when I say my wife and I went through a difficult season, I'm not blaming my folks for that. What I'm saying is, because of the season that we were going through, it put a greater level of stress on what we were going through. So we may have been both each individually frustrated about maybe the level of selflessness that we were having to exhibit, but where it was showing up the greatest was between our relationship with each other. Are you with me?
Yes.
So I think it's fair to say, I can truly say, I copped an attitude towards my wife. I think she copped an attitude towards me too. But we went through what I would call one of the lowest points of our marriage. Now, here's the thing. When my mom and dad made the announcement that they were going to move back towards Lancaster, I immediately thought to myself, good. Don't take that wrong, please. Mom and dad, if you're listening, please don't take that wrong. No, what I thought was, good. Things will go back to the way that they used to be. Oh, contraire, my friend. Just because they relocated did not mean this thing got fixed. So to be frank and honest with you, over the last several months, my wife and I have been engaged in working through some erosion that occurred. I had got entrenched in a want, and I had made that want into a need. Hello?
Yeah.
And because my wife, I felt entitled to it. It became a requirement that led to a judgment about my wife. Now, I'm sure none of you can relate to that whatsoever. And what we lose sight of, listen, here's where we miss it. The Lord is my shepherd. He is the one who supplies my needs. He is the one who satisfies my wants. When we start looking around us to people, neighbors, bosses, friends, so forth and so on. And all of a sudden, how they do and what they do towards us becomes whether I am walking well. We've fallen into some place we should not be. You got five more minutes? Give me five. Just give me five more minutes. It all has to do with where you have set your heart. In Colossians, Paul says this. He says, set your heart on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. See, that's what David had done in Psalm 23. It's not that David had not been through some adverse situations in his life, or he had just, you know, kind of grown up with a silver spoon in his mouth. David had gone through some very challenging things. He was, for one, pursued for his very life by Saul, right? He was abandoned and betrayed by a son, his own son, who also was looking to do him harm. So it's not like David didn't go through some adversity, but having gone through that, he is the same guy who also wrote Psalms like, God, why have you forsaken me? God, where are you at? And that's what ends up happening when we get our eyes set in the wrong place and on the wrong thing, we start to lose sight of God. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. They could even be good things that we want, even godly things, even spiritual things that we want. Again, there's nothing wrong with wanting, but it's about us keeping our eyes set where they belong. Paul says, set your heart on things above, on Christ who is seated at the right hand of God. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the English version of that verse, they translate two different words, set. Those are two different words in the Greek. The one is the word, the first one, the one set your hearts on things above. It's the word zeto. It means to look with the eye, to look someplace, to focus your attention in a particular direction. Set your heart. Get your eyes in the right place. The second set means to distill or to set or to come into agreement about. It's the word pharno. And it means to let something gel in your heart. To let it come to a place of agreement or unity, to have it come into that right place in your heart. So what Paul is saying here is, he's saying, look to the right place, first of all. Look in the right direction. When you're frustrated with life, that's your signal to look to God. The Lord is my shepherd. He is the one to whom I'm looking to. And then what happens is your heart gets set in the right place. I shall not be in want. Because once you truly understand all that God is more than able to provide for you. You know, He has wonderful pasture for us. We don't need to be crawling under the fence, eating over there. He's got all the glorious things our hearts could ever long for. And He just desires us to feed on Him. The problem is what we're so often, most of us, many of us, we get distracted about that. And now we're over here eating off of some brown grass someplace. And we're saying to ourselves, how come I don't feel full? How come I don't feel satisfied? Because we have lost sight of God being our shepherd. We've totally lost sight of it. He is my shepherd. Therefore, I shall not want. Our wants and our desires are shaped by what our hearts are set on. We even say it that way. I really had my heart set on fill in the blank. And what we have our hearts set on is largely shaped by what we are looking at, where you are looking. David was looking at God as his great shepherd. And when he saw God for who he was and the way in which God is more than able to take care of him, he could say with confidence, I shall not be in want. When David says, I shall not be in want, he is saying that he will not allow his life or his heart to be a slave to his wants and desires. His heart was set on God, his good shepherd. Therefore, in trust and confidence, he could know that God would provide for every need in his life. He's the same shepherd who also wrote this passage, or the same David who wrote this passage. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. When you are truly focusing on God as the one who manages, who gives you direction, who takes care of you, who is providing for you, then what happens is when you start looking at him, paying attention to him, focusing on him, all of a sudden those other wants in your life, they're like way secondary. Not that they're not okay, but this is my primary want. And when I'm focused on him and looking to him, it satisfies my soul. I will not be in want. I said to you a moment ago that in the computer of our lives, in this internal thing inside of us, there is this default thing, this setting in there someplace. And I'm not a major computer buff. But I do know enough to know that when I'm printing something and I may have several options to print on, there's one in there that my computer always goes to because it's as a default setting, it's set to that printer. If I want it to print some on a different printer, I've got to click a different button to get it to print differently. Are you there? What I'm talking to you about today is we need to make sure that I'm telling you, the default in us is, the I printer, me printer, right? We need to make sure we keep clicking on the button that says that the Lord printer, right there, right? The Lord is my shepherd. We need to keep clicking on that to have it print out properly. We got to keep clicking on that. Now, I was thinking about this for just a second. And I've often said to people, I think one of the greatest things any young person could do growing up is go on a missions trip. I really believe that. Preferably, like not to New York City, but preferably to a third world country. Because what that will do, and those of you who just came back from Africa recently, you know what I'm talking about. It's because it's fresh in your soul. When you go to those places like that and you see people that don't have the same stuff that you got, you come away almost going, I do anyways, I come away going, feeling guilty about junk I have. It's like there's a reprogramming that takes place in your heart and your soul, and you go like, man, I am really spoiled. I'm totally spoiled. And so what I'm saying to you this morning, I don't know how you make that happen in your heart. I definitely think we can cry out to the Lord and ask him to bring that about. But that's what I'm thinking this morning, that periodically we need this rebooting, this resetting that needs to occur in our souls where we're being reminded afresh that the lover of our soul, the provider of our needs, he is the shepherd of my life. And all of a sudden, those wants that I maybe have had that were really big start to shrink and take on the size that they should have in my life. It's not that they're bad. It's just that sometimes we get things out of proportion. Hello? Okay, that's it. Let's pray. Lord, I'm before you this morning. I'm before my wife this morning. And I'm saying, Lord, forgive me. Forgive us, Lord, for our fence crawling. Forgive us for making some things bigger than they need to be. Lord, our culture certainly promotes all that in our lives. We're hearing every day about why we need this, and they say we need it. We don't, but they're telling us we do, and somehow we get caught up in all that. We think to ourselves, well, you know, I guess I need that. Lord, all we need is you. All we need is you. You are able to satisfy our souls. Yeah, we need some water and some food and things like that, but you are the one who is able to satisfy our souls. So forgive us for looking to other people, looking to other things, and not looking at you as the great shepherd that you are. God, I just want to say publicly, and I hope others will agree, you are a good, good shepherd. You do an awesome job caring for our needs. And to be fair and honest, you do a wonderful job supplying many of our wants. You are a good, good shepherd. Just like Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. You are. He wasn't lying. You said it right. You are the good shepherd. May we get that down deep in our spirit, man, Lord. May we get that down deep in our souls that you are a good, good shepherd. Keep us from ourselves. Lord, when we're having all those debates within our own hearts, Lord, save us from ourselves. Help us not to become, even with a spiritual twist to it, help us not to be about us, Lord. We often say this is all about you. My prayer is that we would actually mean that. Lord, if there's anybody here today who, like me, Lord, wrestles with this kind of stuff, would you help us with that reset in our hearts? Help us click the right button in our soul. Help us to submit and surrender to you afresh as our shepherd. Help us to have eyes to see who you are and how you really provide for us. In seen and unseen ways, Lord. You are so good. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.